Hey, what's good, everyone? My name is Rich, and I'm here with Wim, and this is the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we take a fun, formative look at work and money for the rising professional. What's going on, fam?
Life is good, as always, and this week we got a listener question from one that we thought we better be discussed with someone working in the field. And that question was, speaking of paychecks and balances, plug, last month I came across the real estate site Street Easy. I have to speak through that slowly because I always get it wrong. And they wrote an article saying the typical New Yorker will spend about 65% of their income on rent. To me, that's just insane, as I think the rent to income ratio should be no more than 33% of one's income max. I'm curious what you guys think about this and how it impacts somebody's ability to not just save, but pay the rest of their bills.
When I first saw this, I thought it sounded insane. I was like, 65%, that's freaking nuts. But then I realized it's probably more common than I think or than I thought, even when I thought about what I made versus where I lived when I was in New York. And then especially living out here in the Bay Area where it's expensive as ever. And then I did the math and I was like, I think I spend close to that amount on rent. And then I sat there depressed for a while. It was just all bad.
Do you do gross or net? Which one are you using to determine your 65 and 33 breakdown?
Well, so it was with the net that I realized it.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you just look at the gross alone, that's insane. But when you get to the net, you know, after taxes and all of that other stuff, then that's where that number really goes up. And I was like, yo, I'm spending an insane amount. No, wait, correction. We are spending an insane amount on rent here. And that's just the norm.
You've really been Steph Curry with the corrective moves lately, man. I just want to give you the kudos for that, by the way.
Hey, man. Happy wife, happy life. You know, I know we're a team. I know sometimes my only child syndrome creeps into the mix.
Hashtag smart.
Yeah, but yeah, so we brought on Desi Mullins, who's a real estate agent in New York City. And we talked with her about the rent being too damn high and a lot of other things. So sometimes we're going to get questions that are really better answered by someone who's a professional, an expert, even if they don't want to claim that term for themselves. So we hope you enjoy this and we'll see you all next time. So we're joined by Desi Mullins, a licensed real estate agent in New York City. So, hey, Desi, what's going on? Thanks for joining us. How are those NYC
hola,
streets?
Hola. They're good. The sun's shining. Weather's nice.
Yeah, I wish I could say the same. Everyone always thinks that the weather out here on the West Coast is super peachy, but I'm looking outside right now and all I see is slop buckets on the streets, just nothing but rain and coldness.
That sucks.
Wiz, I'm not sure how it is for you in Texas right now.
It gets cold out there? Yeah, that is actually news to me. I didn't know that was a thing.
It does, man. And this is that transition season. So there's like really what's supposed to be winter out here. It's actually just a really rainy season. So in a few weeks time, once we get to spring, it'll just be hot and sun for like weeks and months on end. And then all of the talk about droughts will be back. This is the only place where I've lived where people are excited when it rains.
Well, yeah, it's about the same out here. I think actually it's supposed to be like in the 80s or something ridiculous today. Like yesterday, it was on the fence. It rained all week. So for those of you who are not familiar, I'm now back in Texas for those of you who are familiar. And so I'm out here in these South by Southwest streets. And yeah, the weather's been actually cooperating. It was kind of nice yesterday.
I hate your guts, fam. I hate your guts.
I felt slightly less washed than usual yesterday. I think that South by Southwest spirit got in my system. And I made the best of it.
Yeah, man, I could tell you were looking pretty alert in your pictures. You were looking like all your joints and everything else were in place. So I was pretty happy to see that you were having a good time.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I got out there among the youth. You know, they were very inspiring. You know what I'm saying? I got some liquid courage to rejuvenate the bones, and I was good.
Let's see how you feel tomorrow, though. That's the true test. It's always 2 days afterwards, at least for me. But I'm not going to go too far down that rabbit hole. So, Desi, so I believe you're not from New York City, are you? Or am I completely
wrong? No, I'm from Chicago originally, but I spent about 8 years in St. Louis.
Okay. Yeah, because I was trying to remember from like way back when. I think when we met, was it at the Blogging While Brown conference?
Yes, and that was like what, 3 years ago almost?
It was like 3 or 4 years ago, which is kind of crazy. And then I know there was that other mixer event. I know we've seen each other at like different events in New York City. And I know somewhere along the way, I remember you saying you were from the Midwest, because I've never met a person from the Midwest that I have not liked, like someone who just like wasn't friendly. And I was trying to figure out why that is. Is that anything that you have insight on? Why y'all?
I'm going to say it's the Southern hospitality roots.
Even though it's the Midwest.
But everybody migrated from like Mississippi and Alabama and everything. So we brought that with us.
That's probably obvious to everyone who's from that area. Like, of course, everyone migrated from the South. Why don't you know that, Rich? And I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm not from the Midwest. I just talked to a bunch of friendly people. So what inspired you to make the leap to the concrete jungle, the mean streets of NYC?
Honestly, I was bored to death in St. Louis, and I felt like I was wasting my life away. I didn't want to go back to Chicago at the time, but I knew I wanted to be in a big city. So I said, let's try New York.
And so when you got there, were you shocked, or was it everything that you expected? Were there things you were like, well, wow, that was a lot more complex and complicated than I thought, or that sucks a lot more than I thought?
It was kind of like a slap in the face, like this is reality. It's not what you see on TV. It's not as it can be, but not right off the bat. You know, you have to put the work in to live the dream.
And yo, Wiz, you haven't spent like much time in New York City. I think you said you've only been there like once, and it was part of a group trip, or am I wrong with that?
I've been like 3 to 5 times. I had an ex that moved out to New York, so we did the long distance thing for a little minute, and then we got to that awkward period about who's going to move where for what, and like I said, that's an ex. So I made a couple moves out there back in the day, but I don't know, it just wasn't for me, man. Like I am true country, like live on an acre, I think, in my spirits. Ooh. That's how I was born and raised. So I just couldn't do it. Like I couldn't see myself living in New York. Not, no offense, no shots, no shots. Please don't see the goons from my head. I'm not making a judgment call. I'm just speaking for me, myself personally.
Yeah, I also don't think you would like the fishing scene in New York City either, unless you want to fish in the Hudson River, which, I mean, if you're into catching those type of fish that they show on The Simpsons, like with the three eyes and they're like oversized, if you want those type of problems, you can catch those type of fish and drink your beer. But I'm guessing you probably like the lagoons and whatever else that is that exist in Texas a bit more.
Y'all think I'm playing? Like I'm not gonna drop these fish pictures on y'all come March. Like, yeah, watch me. I'm gonna be holding 45-pound catfish on the timeline with my little cowboy hat. Y'all think I'm playing?
It sounds like you're reaching for something right now. You're like, look, I got one up on the wall from my trip a year ago.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the weather to warm up. That's really all it is. It's about to be a situation.
Oh man. So Desi, so how did you end up getting into real estate?
I pretty much just fell into it. I started out in hospitality, the restaurant section, and I was just talking to a regular one day, and he's like, his assistant just got her real estate license. And I was like, oh, well, what did she have to do to get it? He's like, oh, she went to this real estate school, blah, blah, blah. And the restaurant I was working at just so happened to close for a week for renovations. And so I mapped out the class schedule, and I was like, I could probably finish this in 2 weeks. So I did it. I did all 75 hours in 2 weeks, just like strictly real estate school, and got the certificate of completion, and I was licensed.
So was it pretty easy to land at a real estate company from that point?
It was, only because I'm a really kind of impulsive person, and it was just an office. I had seen their ads around the city. I had passed the office, and so I randomly went in and spoke with the manager and just loved the vibe off the top and joined with them.
Let me jump in real quick, because that's, I think, a little bit different story than some that we're used to. Is that traditionally how you land a real estate job? Is it more, interpersonal?
Not traditional at all, and it's not what I would recommend to people. I would definitely say kind of do your research and shop around, because, I mean, it worked out for me, thankfully, but it would be better if you lay out what you're looking to get from a company and what area you're trying to focus on, and go with a company that matches up with that.
Glad I asked.
Yeah, that's why I was like, that must be nice. You just kind of walk around. You're like, oh, I want to work there. And you go inside. It's like, hey, here's a job. And it's like, awesome.
You know, that aligns with a fantasy that has still exists, but has slowly faded for me, that I was hoping that one day I'm just walking down the street and that guy, pay that man. And then I just whisked off to a reality show somewhere, and $1 million check start rolling in. I still got hope in the back of my mind. Maybe this South by Southwest weekend will make that dream come true.
Oh man, I'm waiting for that dream too. Less likely to happen out here. I was probably more likely to have someone say that guy arrest that man.
Than that guy pay that man. Unfortunately, yeah, I want to be walking there like shooting a film and a bad guy on it, and the producer's frustrated. He's like, him exactly. Get that man, and they just But I don't know. One day.
So from kind of what you've experienced so far in the real estate world, I guess what were the kind of the most challenging things you found out when you first got into it? You know, because there's always those things where at first it's like, oh, you hear about the positive sides and you're like, oh, you know, I know I'm going to have to probably show a lot of places, you know, mm-hmm. X number of places to make X amount of money. But then there's always those other surprises that come up. So what were some of those things for you?
I would say two of the biggest challenges. Number one would be switching my mindset from like the employee mindset to independent contractor status. Mm. That was a really big one because, you know, when you are kind of like W-2 employee, you have someone telling you, you need to be here at this time, from this time, this is what you need to do. It's not like that in real estate. Nobody's telling you to be in the office. Nobody's telling you to post these ads. Nobody's telling you what apartments you need to be showing. It's something that you kind of have to get a feel for and try it and see if it works for you and just keep adjusting. And then the second biggest challenge would say it's probably bouncing back from rejection. Like, it is a numbers game, but, you know, if you get so many strikes after a while, like it can start to get to you. And then you start questioning yourself, like, is it me? Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? What am I not doing right? And, but it's helped me. It's helped me bounce back and kind of learn to just keep it moving. This no got me closer to my yes.
Yeah. So I spent some time in sales, so I know that pain and struggle. And mm-hmm. and there's certain types of jobs where they have a sales element to them, and you have to be really resilient to be able to do them over the long term.
Yes.
You know, because you got people not showing up, mm-hmm. you got people not calling back, you're calling people back, and suddenly they found another spot just when you thought that they were going to. All of the same pains, and I'm actually starting to feel some tension in my chest as I reflect on my past, so I'm going to try to move on from that. But you mentioned something interesting that I didn't think about. And so for all real estate agents, is that the case that they're all independent contractors?
Technically, yes. We are all independent contractors and commission-based only. The only time that can change is if you are going to be like an on-site agent, which is what I do nowadays. I'm into the new development rentals. So if there's a new building opening, and independent on your company, you could be salary or you could get like a higher commission split. So there are different pay structures.
How have you found that whole process when tax season comes around? Is it pretty easy for you in terms of like getting everything together, or now do you have to have like a person?
I do have a person. Yeah, no TurboTax. I have a really good accountant who helps me. He helps me get everything together quarterly, which I find is easier. And it's all about keeping good records.
Yeah, which is something I'm not the greatest at. I'm not sure about you. Well, actually, fam, I think you got your tax returns back already.
Yes, sir. They are also already spent. But yes, I did get them back. I'm not bragging, but yes.
Yeah, okay.
No, they were previously committed to paying off bills. So they came in and they went out. It was one of those type of things.
Yeah, dollar bill acquisition facilities don't count as bills. But anyway, so for people now who are thinking about the real estate world, you know, would you say that there's still a popping lane for people to get into who are looking to try something different, who maybe want a little bit more of that freedom?
Depending on like whatever your end goal is and the work you're willing to put in for it, it could be a good thing. If you're looking at $1 million listing and think that once you get licensed, that's going to be your life, don't do it.
Yeah. I know the TV shows kind of portray this, this crazy life of super high commissions and you mm-hmm. get one couple and then it's just a matter of what house.
Right.
Which never really happens. So no. sometimes we joked on our other podcast about how we'd watch HGTV. And so all of those shows where the people just seem to have endless amounts of money, just, I know your original budget was $600,000, but we're going to need you to go up to $785,000. And they're like, okay, sure. And I'm like, where does that extra money come from for them to even be able to do that?
What upsets me is they go to the $700,000. They're already over their budget. And then they like they do something that makes no sense. They're like, well, if we put a door here, that brings it to 1.5 million. And I'm like, what? Like, what kind of upgrade? What is that door made out of? Like platinum? Like, I don't know. I guess I just don't understand the real estate market. As told by HGTV.
And that is, and that's part of why we're having this conversation. So there was a listener who wrote in with a question. They'd read an article on Street Easy. I keep wanting to say Speak Easy, but I think that's the whole reason that they call it Street Easy, because it goes with Speak Easy. Mm-hmm. And it was talking about 2016 NYC housing predictions. And so a listener read this, and within this article, which we'll link to this in the show notes, says the typical New York City household is expected to spend 65% of total income on median rent. And so I did some math behind the scenes. I'm not going to run through all the formulas because it's going to have people hella confused, especially when they're just like listening to this wherever they are. But median rent for New York City, it was $2,700, which which to me even felt higher than, and that's the thing. I had to separate median from average, you know, because median is that number that's right in the middle. And actually, as I was looking for additional information, it was really hard for me to find average numbers. It's like everything is in medians when it comes to talking about like housing and income, at least in all of the sites that I tried to visit. And so that 65% of total income, I backed into what that would have to be after taxes, and it's about $4,200. So I came up with a $4,150 in total income after taxes, which then equates to this $2,700, which is 65% of one's income. And at first I was like, that sounds crazy to spend that much. But then I thought about it more. And even when I lived there and even living out here in the Bay Area, I realized that it's quite easy for someone to spend that much. So what have you seen on your side? I'm not sure if you had a chance to also take a look at the article, but does that sound pretty spot on for what you're seeing?
Yeah, I did read the article, and Street Easy is pretty accurate when it comes to their data and things like that. I trust it. I use it a lot. And that 65% is pretty common. I mean, as far as it's not ideal, obviously, because it doesn't allow you to save. And landlords are a little more comfortable with you being around 40% of your income. But there are some that are like, hey, if you want to go up to that 65, then we'll take you.
Like, fine. Even if you're cutting it a little close, we may still take you on. But I'm sure that there's other things that they probably look at too. So like the credit report and.
Right. And it's at the end of the day, it's up to the landlord. I mean, the standard, what we tell people when I'm qualifying people is they're looking for 40 times. So that they're 40% and or somewhere within a few thousand dollars of that. Anything beyond that is going to be too stressful.
I also thought about this a little bit more. And so this means, so on a gross level, the total income for a person would need to be around $5,500, which works out to be about $66,000 annually. You know, I think back and I'm like, it was expensive. I lived in Harlem for a bit, and that was probably the cheap. I think when I lived in Harlem, it was like $1,100. And at the time, that didn't seem as bad. But then when I realized I was living in a shoebox where I could have a foot in the kitchen, a foot in the bathroom, and like a hand in the living room. It was really like I was really able to be like in four different places in my apartment from one spot. Which is, I think there's a spot like that in the country where New Mexico, Wiz, you probably know more about that than I do, where you can like be in four states at once. That's how it was in my apartment.
Yeah, the Four Corners. I actually visited that. Yeah. But I think it was before social media, because I'm pretty positive I don't have a picture. So obviously it didn't happen.
So in terms of the rent game now, you know, and it's always just talk about the rent being too damn high. It's getting crazier. And so, yeah, I wanted to ask you just from your perspective, what are you seeing? You know, is it getting more out of control, or is it stabilizing? Are people being dramatic about the rate at which rent is increasing in New York City?
As far as the rent being crazy, it is. I mean, it is going up. And this is mid-March, I would say maybe April is when peak season kicks off, from about April to October. That's when you're going to find the highest price rents. If you were ever looking for a deal here, the best time to look is in the winter. Rents are a little cheaper. And then as far as like the broker's fee, you can find more apartments where the landlord is willing to pay my fee versus a tenant have to pay it. And in the peak season, all the tenants are going to have to pay the fees. That's just pretty much what it is, unless it's a new development.
In which case?
If it's a new development, usually the landlord's paying the broker's fee. You usually don't. But the rent's going to be higher. So there's a give and take.
Yeah, because I was going to say, if it's new, people usually want to flock to new things. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm a little surprised to hear that the landlords would pay that. But I guess, is that because they want to get it just occupied as quickly as possible?
Right. They want to get people in.
And in terms of the whole neighborhood breakdown, so I also read a lot about Brooklyn in particular, and that Brooklyn has it more difficult than some of the other boroughs, at least in terms of the median income. So I was reading an article on Slate. So Slate publishes a lot of depressing articles. I've just noticed that. And this article, it's from 2014, but it at that time it said Brooklyn's median household income is less than $45,000. And, you know, I'm sure I haven't read anything that said that there's been a 30% increase in the median household incomes in that area. So I guess in terms of the folks that you're seeing in Brooklyn or versus maybe folks that you're seeing in other areas, are there any kind of differences in terms of the success rate for people who are looking for units and trying to get it accepted into particular homes?
Well, compared to Manhattan, Brooklyn has way more new developments popping up, which is a good and can be good and bad. It's good because that means that there are some affordable units, but it's bad because the constraints around the affordable housing, sometimes people, it's too hard to even meet. And it depends on where it is. For example, there's a new development in downtown Brooklyn, but because of what the median income is in that area, between the affordable housing and the market rate units, there's only about a $200 to $300 difference per month.
Wait, so only $200 to $300?
Yes, because of the median income of that area. So they can, I mean, like technically they would consider it affordable, but it's not. It's really not.
For the units that you're typically leasing to folks or getting folks interested in, what's the price range that they typically fall in?
I would say right now the hot spot is for a one bedroom in Brooklyn. We're looking at $1,600 to $1,800. That's the hot spot. But a little more realistic is going to be $2,000 to about $2,300 right now.
So how about the square? Like, is there an average square footage that you're seeing on these units?
I would say for something that's like $1,750, I just had... I had like a first floor of a brownstone, and it was technically a 1.5 bedroom. Like, it had that one room was like an office space, but you could kind of use it as a bedroom
for like a child.
You could fit a little twin in there. You know, people make it work. It's New York. They're going to make it work with that. And it wasn't like super renovated, but it was a nice, it was in good condition. So yeah, that, and I would say 800 square feet.
That's pretty decent.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty, I think when I was in Brooklyn, I think my spot, I don't think damn sure it wasn't 800 square feet. I want to say it was probably like, I don't know, 691. I don't know how I got that number, but
691.
All I know is it felt a lot bigger than, where I lived in Harlem, but
yeah,
you know, still not massive. And
yeah, you definitely get more space in Brooklyn than Manhattan usually.
Yeah, yeah. And so, Wiz, I'm not sure about your living status, you know, in the areas you've been in. So I always assume for everywhere like outside of New York and now California that you're paying like $500 for like 2,000 square feet apartments. That's pretty much what I assume about Texas and Colorado, maybe not as much. I know that the Denver area was becoming more of a hot spot, so I imagine that might have drove things up a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking over here in silence. Like, this whole conversation is pretty insane to me. I've never paid $2,000 for rent ever, and I've had, yeah, thousands of square feet to occupy at different points. And I'm like, even when I had, I think, a roommate, and we had a two-bedroom, I don't even think that was $2,000. I'm pretty sure that was under two. I think it was like $1,600. So, yeah, this conversation is pretty crazy to me. Denver... which is weird because Austin's the expensive city in Texas, but Denver was a higher cost of living than Austin. Pretty much across the board. Even my car insurance went down when I came here, which I guess is related to like all the snow or something. I don't know, but I didn't expect that.
Yo, that was
like I paid lower car insurance for the Charger than I did for the 10-year-old Camry in Denver. Full coverage. Like, it makes no sense.
That car insurance tidbit is one of the things I enjoyed most about when I got to California and I switched things over and I saw that like $65, $70 drop. I was like, woo, Ric Flair, boy. So many savings. Everything. I mean, just living in New York in general, it's just expensive to be in like all aspects of life. Now, okay, so maybe there's like the bodegas and you get the $4 or $5 sandwich, which I can probably say I ate way too many of those. Philly cheesesteak on a hero with lettuce, tomato, onion, and mayo. From all of those different spots out there, which probably added up in ways that I wouldn't like. But you know, I'd say New York is San Francisco. I know it's pretty close between the two about which city is more expensive. And I'd say probably just from what I know now and living out here that that San Francisco is probably more expensive than a lot of areas in New York City. And also because the public transit system, I mean, there is one out here, it's called BART. And, you know, there are other public transit systems that are in the area. But if you don't live right in the city, then you definitely got to have a car. And so then you're talking about a gas mileage. So it's very easy to spend like $300 a month in gas out here. Wow. Super easy. And then on top of rent, you know, I'm listening to what you're saying about New York City, and yeah, I'm seeing, you know, one bedrooms or what they're calling a one bedroom, but it really used to just be a big closet, and they're like, yep. Oh, it's a micro apartment, mm-hmm. and we're gonna charge you $2,400 for that. So actually, that's a good question for you. So have you had to deal with any of the micro units?
I have not. I mean, I've seen them, I've taken a look at them, but I have not met anybody who was interested in them. But I mean, they are renting, so somebody wants them.
Yeah, I was gonna say. So, how do you even sell those things? Is it just like, so do you just sell strictly on the price, or is like, look, you can, if you're a little person, you can actually have a full. If you're like 3 feet tall, this is like the equivalent of having a 1,000-square-foot apartment.
I think the biggest thing, the main people they are marketing them to is like students who aren't going to be spending much time in their apartment anyway. They want to be in the city and they want to be, you know, out with their friends, or they're going to be at school. So they're like, it's just a place to lay my head and shower.
Yeah. So pretty much not for those who are sophisticated like us and sipping right. tea and coffee before recording and eating at fine establishments on the weekend.
You know, it's all a matter of principle, too, because I had the issue before with the missus where 500, 600, like I still probably only occupy 300 square feet at any given time of my home. I go from the bed to the TV to the kitchen. Like, so I could probably live in a studio just on general principle. I get the bigger place. I get the Mick apartment, you know, I guess. Yeah, like I don't need 1,000 square feet. I don't even know what to do with it. Like I have to buy IKEA furniture to occupy spaces that would otherwise just sit idly and empty for years at a time.
Yeah, I used to think that was such a good thing. I had an apartment back in Boston. It was probably the biggest bedroom I ever had. And I definitely had just like one dresser that had like a handle missing. I don't know why I mentioned that as an important fact. But it probably brought down the quality of my establishment for anyone that visited. But I'm not going to talk too much about that either. And yo, I just had like just open space. And to me, it was a good thing. It's like, look at all this space. There's nothing in it. But then I realized to someone coming over, my apartment probably looked empty. And it probably made me think.
Malfurnished.
That's what it looked like. You know, I think I had like one thing on the wall. It was like one picture of something random. And then everything else was just like spaced out. And I thought that I was living the life. And I was also probably, well, a decade, oh no, not quite a decade younger, but I was younger. So having that space did make me feel like I had moved on up, but I'm realizing now and looking at how much stuff that we have here, I'm like, yeah, my apartment was definitely malnourished back in the day.
Yeah, like my old place had a spot for a kitchen, a dining like area. I never bought a dining table. So it was just open. It was just this open space. And I realized when I moved over here, like I mean, maybe you'll know the term for it. It's like a combined living or open, whatever, open floor plan. So there's like I have no pressure to buy a dining room anymore because that was never going to happen anyway. So now you just walk in and you walk into the living room, you know? So it's like they've given up on the millennial generation. Like they not sitting down and eating. Like who are we kidding ourselves? Let's just get that out of here. So I was actually grateful. I was like, thank you for not putting that peer pressure on my shoulders.
So is that also the wave in New York City, too, with the whole open, everyone wants an open concept?
Surprisingly, people do like that. Or I see a lot of people are a fan of like the islands with the countertop that hangs over and will allow you to put like bar stools. Mm-hmm. People like that instead of like a dining alcove.
I don't think I've really had a true open. Well, I guess in a bootleg way, I could consider my Harlem apartment an open floor plan, just given that it was like 400 square feet. And I could see from the bathroom, through the kitchen, through the living room, into the bedroom. So that was my start it from the bottom type of floor plan. But also when we watch HGTV, that's a lot of what they're talking about. Everyone wants the open concept. You know, they want to be able to see through and have flow and hardwood floors. And I do want hardwood floors in my next spot. Just
Yo, I could speak to that, man. It's a little bit overrated for two reasons. First of all, it's always dusty. So you don't have to Swiffer it up like a mug. I'm a little passionate about this. I actually probably need to Swiffer this weekend. And then number two, like, this is probably the old man thing, but yo, that hardwood floor is not forgiving on your feet. Like, you're going to need some house shoes immediately. Like, the first week I was walking around, I'm like, man, why my lower back always hurting and my feet so? And I was like, is it the floor? Like, because the carpet, the difference between the carpet and the floor, like that little centimeter of give that a carpet like gives you, I guess, like, watch, bro. So you'll see. This sounds crazy to anybody who's not washed and doesn't own hardwood floors. But everybody at home right now is clapping and laughing and drinking their hot tea like, yep, got my house shoes on right now, young one. Yeah, so it's a little bit overrated, man.
Carpet shows the dirtiness so much more, though, man.
All right, when your feet hurting, you get back on the podcast. We talk about it.
I mean, that's probably a valid point. So we might end up moving into like renting a house and we get there and then I'm struggling around. I'm like, why my joints feel all decrepit and deteriorated? It's because we got the hardwood floors. But I think I'm also influenced by having a pet, though. And so when there's accidents, you know, it's much easier to deal with those accidents on a hardwood floor than in the carpet where you got to spray the stuff on it. You got to wait 10 minutes. You got to press the paper towel. You got to run the vacuum cleaner on the low mode all over it. You know, any little spot from outside is immediately picked up. That's the ish that I'm trying to get away from. But
give and take.
I hear what you're saying, brother. I hear what you're saying. So, Desi, any thoughts for or other things that people should keep in mind when they're looking to rent in a major city like New York?
I would say do not be afraid of brokers. We don't have the best reputation here, but good brokers like myself, we are actually here to help and save you time. It's always good to be prepared because when it's peak season and an application is due, like, I've seen people miss out on an apartment just because they didn't have one document. And the next person came along, had their stuff ready, and they snatched it from under them.
Oh, I've been there.
And if you like something, like, move on it. Don't go shopping around trying to find something better. If you like it, if it meets enough of your boxes, like, just take it.
You got me with the peak season, non-peak season thing, because a lot of people, they finish school and they move to New York. It's peak season.
Mm-hmm.
Their pre-existing lease that they're then getting out of wraps up in peak season.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you, so any advice for people who are maybe in a peak season lease who are looking to get into a non-peak season lease because of the savings, like anything that you've seen people do to kind of creatively break their lease and not be super penalized in the process? Or is that pretty much what you have to deal with?
Well, you can always find like a subletter or something like that, or talk to your landlord about finding somebody to take over the lease. Or again, this is when a broker can help. Brokers can help you rent that old sublet that or with the lease you're trying to get out of. Or you can work something out and say maybe the person moving in has a longer lease, or maybe they pay the increase, or there are creative things you can do. You can pitch it to the landlord.
So are most places, and I never tried the sublet thing. So, but is that pretty easy to do in New York? It seems like most places are pretty cool with doing that.
Well, I would say private owners are a little more lenient when it comes to that. If it's a big company, they sometimes, and then like being rent stabilized and things like that, that plays a part. But usually bigger companies are like, nah, you got to find somebody and you're responsible. And there's an increase, and there's this, you're going to be penalized. I have someone, they are from out of the country. They lost their jobs, and because they were on a visa, it says if you're not working, you cannot be in the country.
Ooh, yeah.
You have 30 days to get out. There's like 4 more months left in their lease, and to break the lease, they would forfeit their security deposit. They have to pay 2 months, and there's like whatever concession they received when they moved in, like a month free or anything like that. Mm-hmm. They also forfeit that concession.
Oof.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty brutal. And it's actually, I deal with that a lot, especially working in IT with people who are on visas. And if their visa lapses, yeah, they pretty much have 30 days to like land mm-hmm. something or get out,
mm-hmm.
which is super stressful. So do you have go-to sites that you recommend? So there's a ton of sites out there that deal with real estate, but do you have sites that you recommend to people who are maybe going through this process and looking to sublet, like maybe sites that work out better, you know, because there's like monster for careers, but who's mm-hmm. who's really messing with monster anymore? But so are there sites like that in the real estate side that you'd really recommend for people who are seriously considering making a move to a city like New York?
If you're looking for a sublet, I think Craigslist can be your friend in that sense, because sublets are tough to find here. Word of mouth and just reaching out to your network is going to help you. And then there's an actual site, sublet.com, that will work.
It's like the most obvious site name. I've never been to it. Cool, man. So Wiz, anything else you want to add or ask?
Do we have time for one or both of these, or what are your thoughts? I need to start running the clock.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, we do. Yeah, we can.
Just what advice would you offer in general for renting versus buying, if you have any thoughts?
In New York? Or just
I'd say in general. Yeah.
In general. I would say be cognizant of what your end goal is. Like, you need to know what your why is, and it needs to be pretty strong. Like, don't live beyond your means. A lot of people get into buying situations with significant others and things like that, and then they encounter all of these problems in the long run. And save yourself the headache by planning.
Does that advice change any for investment property versus personal ownership, or still the same?
I would say investment, you need to be a little, like definitely take your emotions out of it and have a lot of foresight. And if it's the profit that is your goal, like really do your research on the area and things like that.
And then I'm going to try to describe this correctly, and I hope you get it. So,
Godspeed, good sir.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle, we'll get there. But okay. Any thoughts on the 20% down payment versus, and I think here's the part that I'm confused. I think if you don't do the 20% down, there's like a penalty of some sort, an insurance penalty or something to that effect.
I'm not familiar with that. That may be something that is unique to Texas. Here, there is no getting around your down payment unless like you're a first time home buyer and there's a program with your lender. Sometimes they will like give you money towards it, but there's no getting out of a down payment. And okay. Especially if it's like a co-op or something here, like you have to have a certain amount of like liquid assets and things like that.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. I think that's all I got.
What separates a co-op? And I mean, I could probably Google this, but I have you here, so I'm going to ask you. So what separates a co-op from an apartment versus like a condo? Like what? I don't quite understand what the difference is.
So New York's market is majority co-ops. And a co-op, the difference with the co-op and a condo, the co-op is it's not actual property. You own shares in a company, and in exchange for the shares you own, they're essentially leasing you this apartment.
Oh.
But then a condo, you own that unit. Co-ops are typically cheaper, but it can be a stricter process because the co-op board makes their own rules and they can deny you for who knows what. Condos a little more lax. They're not always like in your business. You can rent this out. Co-ops, they're going to say you can't rent this. You need to be living here.
Yeah. Yo, now that I think about it, I had someone I knew who lived in a co-op, and I never asked them what the difference was, but I do remember that they got like subpoenaed to like appear before the board or something like that mm-hmm. because of like some complaint. And I was like, really? You had to like go before a board? Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah. I'm like, what the hell is this? The board? It's like it's like all your neighbors, just the person you don't speak to, the person right, with right. the dog just always barking, and it's like, what happens? They determine what happens, whether or not you get to keep your place or they can kick mm-hmm. you out.
Yeah, pretty much.
Man, get out of here with that. I think that is everything that we wanted to cover on this side. So, Desi, appreciate you so much for joining us. Any closing thoughts or anything you want to add for the people?
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. Hopefully, I was insightful.
Yeah.
If anybody has any questions about real estate, any needs, any advice, feel free to email me, desi.mullins@gmail.com.
Yeah, I was taking a sip and I was like, are you gonna say the address? Because I forgot. So I was like half choking, half trying to say what's the email address, but I'm glad it ultimately worked out. But thanks for everyone for listening. I hope you got some insight out of this. You know, for those who haven't done the big city thing but are thinking about it, hopefully we've given you some things to think about. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.